Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast covers everything tech. The hottest mobile phones, tablets, games. We review it, rate it, test it. Whether you're Microsoft or Apple, Android or iPhone, we'll give it to you
again and again.
Black and white. The Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast.
Welcome to Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast. This is episode 19. I'm your host, Jonathan Charney.
And I'm your co-host, Shane Northrup.
Today, we're going to be talking about hacking, AI, beer, and augmented reality. So we're going to jump straight into the hacking. And if you've watched anything of the news lately, you know that the DNC, which is the Democratic National Committee, has been hacked. WikiLeaks actually released a bunch of things. And you know that the FBI has been doing some nefarious good. I don't want to get too particular into the politics, but this is hacking now, because we're in the modern era, is a reality of life. So it's interesting to me that you've got one of the major parties in the United States. There's a bunch of little parties, but Republicans and Democrats are pretty much the two parties. How their tech security just wasn't up. Now, according to all the news I could find, it was voicemails, it was emails, and all the news at the moment is basically saying that nothing was, condemning. You know, like the voicemails was like a child talking to their parents. You've got a conversation between committee members. Now, and a little bit the politics side, they do say that one of the Democratic nominee for president was favored over one of the guys running. So what do you think? I mean, for me, you know, I'm not really surprised any of this got out. I'm kind of surprised, I guess, that they didn't know about this sooner. Do they keep it under wraps? But I mean, what do you think?
I don't know, man. Like, I'm just surprised that we didn't get another Bill Clinton girlfriend scandal out of this.
Now, do you think this is a case of ethical hacking? Because the WikiLeaks people, they believe in releasing a bunch of information. They've done it before.
Oh, yeah.
So do you think this is ethical? Do you think this is damaging? I mean, I'm the type of person that has always believed that you give people the information and let them choose. Now, if you talk about the media is all about a narrative. If you talk about politics is all about a narrative. So that's the part I'm kind of shocked at, is the fact that they're still able to control this narrative, even though the fact that, you know, as computer guy, I'm thinking, was somebody's password God? I mean, what did they do to get this much stuff released? This is a lot of information.
Yeah, I know. What was it that you said, that they just didn't really have security up?
That's what it seems like. I mean, I've read a couple of stories, and honestly, they're not giving too much information. So I was reading, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the website. They were saying they didn't want to release too much information about the hack because they don't want the methods behind it being released. So my assumption is somebody had, was it love, secret, sex, or God as the password, and somebody got into it.
I mean, my guess is that it's the old Spaceballs thing. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Because this was a lot of information. I mean, this isn't, they got into some, the server there, because there were audio recordings, there were emails, this was the stuff from high end on the DNC. And so this is to me, still, I know I keep saying it, but I'm godsmacked that anybody was able to do this.
I hate to say that it doesn't surprise me, but it really doesn't surprise me. I really don't feel like political parties are that, like, good with controlling their secrets.
Now, from my end, I don't disagree, but from my end, I think this is definitely a worry on the technology aspect of it, because you'd think that some of these guys would realize, okay, we need to beef up security. Like in the Pentagon, I know a few people who have actually been in the Pentagon, looked at the computers. A lot of the computers, the USB ports, at least back, you know, mid to late 90s, they were all glued over. Like, you couldn't put a USB in there because they were afraid of copying.
That's great. That's awesome.
See, you would, you know, it's just like Mark Zuckerberg putting tape over the camera port on his laptop. If you see all these tech luminaries and, well, the Pentagon, you would think that you would kind of follow the same rules of things if you're literally one of the most important political parties in the U.S.
Right. And of the two major parties in the United States, I feel like the Republican Party would probably have more of a problem with security as far as on the technology side than the Democratic Party. So I guess that kind of surprises me a little bit.
I think, honestly, it's a little bit of an age thing. No offense to anybody out there who's past a certain age. But if you look at the people who are on the politicians, like Barack Obama, the current United States president, was the first president, I think, to use
social media at all.
Yeah, social media. He had a Twitter account. I think he was the first one really seen to be attached to his BlackBerry. So I think any president afterwards is going to start seeing social media. I think that's going to be a bigger issue as time goes on is, you know, say the next president using an iPhone, for example, or, you know, the president after that doing social media. So I think this is going to be something they're going to have a better social media policy.
Probably. But you know, I don't know if I see Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton really even knowing their way around a phone.
You know,
Hillary Clinton probably more so than Donald Trump.
See, the only thing, without getting too much in the politics, you don't really know too much about the politicians. They're generally really controlled. I've met a good deal of people who I've voted for over the years through various things I've done. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I've always been shocked is they're smarter than they appear on TV.
Well, isn't everybody?
Yeah. See, that's the problem is I wouldn't be surprised if Donald Trump, you know, nose around his handset of choice. He seems like he'd be more a BlackBerry user, you know, just like the Clinton. And the other story I want to get into, and this topic is a little sensitive, so I'm going to be vague on purpose. The FBI is doing what I'm calling ethical hacking. I guess you'd call it white hack versus the black hat. White hat, for example, is the old Western movies, the black and white ones. The bad guy always wore a black hat. The good guy always wore a white hat. That's how you knew who the good guy and bad guy was.
Kind of like spy versus spy.
Exactly. And so ethical hacking or white hat hacking, it would be considered a good thing. Now, the FBI released a bunch of malware to find things that were very inappropriate, very illegal. And it happened to reach across country lines into Australia. The FBI, it was Operation Pacifier was the FBI's name for it. And the question on this one is not so much what they were hacking for, trying to find, was the fact that they basically released malware into the wild and got on people's computers. They were trying to find a dark web site, which is part of, I guess, how would you describe the dark web? It's like a subsection of the internet. It's kind of that's the way I describe
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, gray market type stuff, black market type stuff, and then, you know, you're looking for snuff films and torture porn.
So just unappealing stuff to most people, I guess.
Yeah, bad stuff.
So they were trying to get a hold of websites and people, and I'm all for a lot of the stuff they do, but my main problem with it is they're affecting people's computers, and they're going across country lines, which by the way, is this is going to come to a head because I have no doubt Australia is very upset. I mean, what do you think? Do you think they should have the legal ability to infect people's computers and search for things that are illegal? I mean is this like the Fourth Amendment kick in, at least United States-wise?
You know, if it gets rid of like child pornography and a lot of the darker websites, that would be fine. But I do think that it is a little bit crazy to be going over into other countries, you know, internet stuff. I don't see Australia really having too much of a problem with it because Australia's been having our backs since like World War II. And every time we turn around, Australia's like, we're here to help you guys.
Well, the only reason, and I'm thinking that they would be upset, excuse me, is the fact that this is not something they as a country volunteered for. This is something that just was forced upon them. And from a tech aspect, unfortunately, not everybody is tech savvy on what to do. Like, for example, you'd never open a zipped file that somebody emailed you to. If you don't know the person who emailed you the file, don't open it. Be careful of websites and protection. And so the problem is this affects the bottom percentage in people who don't practice safe computing.
Well, one of the things that I think is really also important to note is that the world is kind of in a global state right now. So it wouldn't surprise me if even Australia had some stuff that's dipping into the United States as far as white hacking goes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So this is more, you affect us, I affect infect you, you share information, share information.
The internet's a worldwide thing, you know, and it would probably be really hard to just subsection off, you know, certain areas, especially when, you know, you could have criminals working out of servers in other countries just because they think they might be safer.
True. Now we're coming up to a break. When we come back to the break, we're going to be talking about AI. So catch you after the break.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch, whatever it may be.
So it appears as though Russia has entered in the space race, so to speak, of artificial intelligence. So at a cognitive architectural conference in New York last week, a professor of cybernetics of the cybernetics department at the Moscow Engineering Physics Institute, her name is Alexei Samsonovich, something like that. I'm really bad at Russian. So
it's better than I could have done.
They are testing some things that involves human and machine interactive. So basically what they're trying to do is they're trying to test whether or not using little virtual games and avatars in a virtual world. And you have to play with teamwork, using teamwork, trust, and betrayal, and various other social communication. You are interacting with an AI, and they're trying to figure out how the AI learns, whether or not the AI can grow an emotional build towards the human avatar. And it was inspired by a test done in the 1950s that determines, you know...
It's like the Turing test?
Exactly. It's the Turing test. So it's to determine whether or not a machine can successfully pass for human.
And so that would be the test if the AI is alive, so to speak.
Right. So I think what they're trying to do is by making this virtual world and these little puzzles and stuff that you have to go through, I think they're eventually going to work with it, see how the AI learns, and then maybe put someone up against it and see if the person thinks that they're playing with a human or a robot.
See, I think all this is going to do is going to show everybody that AIs hate micro puzzles as much as humans do in video games.
I think we could definitely see some robotic rage.
Me hate game. I think this is cool. I still love the idea of artificial intelligence, no matter how much like the sci-fi geek in me is like, don't do it. It never goes well for the humans. I'm actually excited to see if it shows AI's learning. The only issue is, you know, like we've said before, is what is the AI learning? Like, you know, what was the story about them finding pictures of wolves and showing what it was? And eventually they found that all the wolves happened to be in the snowy background. So it was looking for the snowy background versus the animal.
Right.
So I'm not quite sure what this is actually going to be finding.
Well, that's something I'm kind of curious about, too. I think one of the biggest things that we'll probably see is if the robot is given the option to betray the human, whether or not it will. I think that's going to be a big factor in this.
Interesting. And how do you prove that an AI is learning? Do you look at the code? Do you ask it questions?
Well, probably just like Tay. Probably how quickly it can learn things and how quickly it can discover the puzzles as opposed to when it started. Just like Tay's grammar was bad when she started, and then at the end she was using perfect punctuation.
Which, by the way, for the internet and Twitter, still makes me laugh.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty interesting. I don't know. I just... Honestly, the thing that interests me more is the Minecraft AI more than this.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love the fact they say... wondering if, like, what was it, AIs have emotion?
Right.
That's the part that interests me most because, you know, for example, 2001 Space Odyssey, at the end you kind of saw Hal developing that a little bit.
Well, I think with this too, I think the difference between this and the Microsoft AI thing is that with the Microsoft AI thing, they're just trying to see, I think, the pattern and the path that the AI is going to take. With this, I think they're trying to see how connected it can get to a human playing with it.
Interesting. So this is more for emotional connection than anything else.
Right. And one of the things that I do think is a little bit interesting is they're trying to do the Turing test, but honestly, if you play video games at all and you play with bots, like for say, for example, you're playing Counter-Strike Go and you turn the bots on, a lot of times you wouldn't even be able to tell if you were playing against bots or people, you know.
Oh, well, yeah, true. And especially if it's any of the ones like in some video games, the more you play against bots, the more they learn how you play.
Right.
And then you're kind of screwed because they pretty much match you for how you play.
Right. Well, like in Metal Gear and Far Cry 3 and 4 for that matter too, the enemies, once they start to realize that, you know, you use sniper rifles, oh man, now they got helmets so that way you can't shoot them in the head, you know. Or, you know, they start using sniper rifles themselves, or, you know, they start adjusting their defensive capabilities based on what they've seen you do in the past. So just because Russia is doing AI doesn't mean that Microsoft's not getting involved. So Microsoft's got a new AI thing, and Microsoft seems to have this big obsession with AIs right now. It seems like every other week we're coming in here with another story of something Microsoft is trying to do that's artificial intelligence related. So Microsoft Pix uses AI to help your iPhone take the bestest pictures.
The bestest pictures?
The bestest pictures.
I bet that's exactly how Microsoft put it, too. I've used the app a little bit in a little bit of a use in a small use cases, right now primarily in the car and some confined spaces. It seems like, to me, that it seemed it did like a group of pictures and you kind of select the best of the pictures. This is what it seemed like to me when I used it.
Kind of.
I wasn't really all that impressed. Mainly for me is I've done camera work in the past. So for me, when I'm taking a picture, I'm actually framing it by eye. So I don't really need necessarily need a camera to tell me how to do it from what I'm doing. But for an amateur photographer or somebody who doesn't really know what they're doing, I think this is a perfect idea. It helps frame the picture because what it does is it highlights the faces. It gets you in there. For me, it was annoying.
So what it does is, it's more made for the selfie generation. It's made for people who want to take pictures and take them really nice, but don't exactly know how to use the manual settings on a camera or the manual settings on a phone camera, for that matter. So what it does is it uses artificial intelligence to make sure you take the bestest pictures by eliminating the human error and botched captures. So what it does is it captures a lot, like you said, it captures a lot of different pictures, and then it enhances the image color, exposure, and the other little variables that come into play. So it optimizes for people specifically when it detects that there are any in the frame. And I'm not sure how AI related this is. Like, I know it's supposed to help you pick the ideal settings, but a lot of times, like, the automatic settings already do that on cameras. I'm wondering if maybe it learns and then uses from there. Like, I mean, I'm wondering if, like, you use it a lot, if, you know, the 20th time you're using it, it works better than the first time you're using it. Like, I don't know.
My assumption was partially based on, like, the background. You know, for example, if it's a very sunny day and everything's kind of blown out, it's going to adjust everything so it's not as blown out versus a dark sky, a night shot. You know, that was my thought was it's based off of that. And then from that, it'll say, okay, this person's Caucasian, so let's adjust this, or this person's this. That was kind of my thought. That's all based up off of pigment tones and how blown out the photo is.
Right, but automatic settings can basically already do that for you. So my question is does this thing learn? Because, like, the definition of an AI is intelligence. I mean, you need to be able to learn to be intelligent, right?
You're right. I'm just trying to think. I'm thinking maybe this is more of a group thing versus individuals. Like, the more people use this, the better it gets, and the
Ooh.
More. That's kind of my
like
thought
a hive
about
mind
it.
Type thing.
Yeah, like It may get better if you use it, because I have no doubt that eventually it learns, okay, this person does this, this, and this. But I'm thinking, say if there's 1,000 people who uses it, goes back to Microsoft, Microsoft's, then kind of goes up, blows it out to everybody else.
Well, my big thought when I first heard this was that the artificial intelligence is going to get obsessed with some 13-year-old Snapchat queen. And, you know, it's going to be extremely creepy and try to find her in real life or something. I don't know. This could turn into a horror movie really fast.
Hey, it's like that website, that movie, was it fear.com? I think, I don't know. I that's hilarious, by the way. A camera obsessed with a 13-year-old girl. By the way, that's a perfect movie. If anybody wants to make that movie, make sure you credit GSMC's Technology Podcast, particularly my broadcast partner, Shane Northrop, because that's a killer idea.
Literally a killer idea.
Jeez. I'm actually curious to see how well it really works. I didn't get a chance to do a lot of outside use. That's something I'm planning on doing this week, is seeing how well it works in, you know, an outside environment that's not indoors or in a car, because that's pretty much where I used it. I just wasn't really that impressed. And I was fighting it a little bit from what I wanted to do.
I feel like the way that it would go down too is, I don't know too many people that would be that interested in it besides people who, like, most people who are into technology and that sort of thing like to take their own pictures anyway and like to have all the manual settings. So the audience that this appeals to, I don't think is right for it. Like, I can't imagine some 13-year-old girl being like, ooh, Microsoft Pix, what? I'm going to use this instead of my normal camera.
I'm thinking this is for more like Ma and Pa Kettle, somebody who doesn't really know technology, that wants to take it but is not, say, a photography, or they never really taken any pictures, doesn't know how to frame a shot, doesn't know how to put, you know, do lighting or this or that. It's kind of my thought.
Like aunts and uncles and grandmas and grandpas.
Because for me, if I want somebody, say, on the far left, it's because I want more of the background than the people in it. So, you know, and so in this thing, it fights you a little bit for me. And I wasn't really impressed. I'm going to continue using it just to see if it grows on me, gangrene.
Well, and let me know if it gets obsessed with you.
Maybe I'll get obsessed with it. You know, maybe I'll get like Microsoft points for it. Hey, by the way, Microsoft, if I use this, can I get Xbox credit? Because I use that more than I do the app on my phone. So we're going to be heading off to a break. And when we'll come back from the break, we're going to be talking about something a Kevin Costner movie had.
This is your ultimate stop for everything sports. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Should I say more? From the NFL, MLB, the NBA, to MMA, it's all in here. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Listen now.
In the movie Waterworld, right at the beginning, Kevin Costner relieved himself into the device that eventually turned his waste into water. And apparently, that is reality. Now, that's something that's been done on the space station, if I remember correctly, for a while. If I remember correctly.
I'm sure NASA has that technology.
It's nothing new. But this thing says it can turn urine into beer.
Before we get started on that, I just want to say, if you can create a machine that turns your piss into fresh water, then why can't you turn the salt water around you into fresh water using a very similar device? Like, that was something I just never got about Waterworld.
I'm assuming that desalinization takes a little bit more processing power.
Still, if you can come up with a way to do it with your piss, I don't think that it would be that much more difficult to figure out how to do it with salt water. But anyway.
So here's actually the coolest thing about this, because, well, I'm just going to read part of my notes, just because this is actually kind of flabbergasting and godsmacking, in my opinion, is the researchers at Ghent, that's G-H-E-N-T, University, created a device that uses solar power, boiler, and a special membrane to separate the urine into two parts, water and fertilizer. So the coolest two things about this, especially if you're going to say like Africa and parts of Africa that just don't get a lot of rain, or they don't have a lot of certain resources, one, you've got drinkable water and fertilizer, something that you need for growing food. Now, this works by purifying the urine. The researchers first collect it into a tank and heat it using a solar-powered boiler As the water evaporates, it passes through a membrane which separates its nutrients found in urine and useful as fertilizers such as nitrogen and phosphorus. Although the water generated by the machine is drinkable, the researchers plan to make a beer out of the 1,000 liters as at the music festival. Now, here's the thing where the headline was it was a little misleading. They don't actually tell you how they make the beer. I'm assuming you're going to need the hops. But what it's more about is the fact they're separating waste into drinkable water, which something, if they make this cheap enough, worldwide, I actually think this is going to save lives.
Yeah, this could be pretty cool. The fact that it's solar powered, too, is kind of awesome. The only thing that I can think of is with a headline like solar powered machine turns urine into beer, a lot of racist jokes just pop up into my mind.
Well, please don't go farther than that.
No, I'm just going to leave it at that, and you guys can infer.
I originally picked this story is because there's a lot of organizations throughout the world who want to try to help bring clean water to areas that don't have it. And I'm totally for creating wells. I actually think the company, the people who do it, is an amazing organization. I don't remember their name off the top of my head, but this is awesome. But this, to me, is something that I also think we need to get cheaper. The other question for me is maintenance. Like, right. How often does the membrane have to replace? And I truly want this to become something that's universal, that's worldwide. Because if we can get people fresh water and, by the way, fertilizer, you're doing two things that people need. You know, you're getting fertilizer to help plants grow and drinkable water. I mean,
and then we can take it a step further, maybe even be able to purify other forms of water, you know.
Oh, yeah. If you could figure out how to, for example, what you said earlier, if you can turn salt water into fresh water without the amount of electricity that's needed in desalinization, we've basically, anybody near an ocean can just, pump a few tanks full of water.
Right.
I'm amazed. I'm hoping they give more information about this because I have not found a great deal of information about this. It sounds like they're going to be testing it at a music festival, which, by the way, seems like the perfect use case. You've got a bunch of drunk people, and obviously drunk people have to use the restroom. To me, this is literally the perfect way to test it to see how well it works.
Right. I don't know if I would buy beer that was made out of urine, though.
I definitely wouldn't. But for me, this is like what I would do if I was them is I wouldn't have do that. I'd pay people to use the restroom. You go home, you get a bunch of test samples, and you say, okay, this doesn't work, this doesn't work. Because
right.
I'm not really jazzed a lot by green technology. The stories we've done here, I am. This is one of the coolest green technologies that'll save people's lives. And we're going to switch off a little bit, so we're kind of heading in different directions here.
So Magic Leap just had a new demo show, Shopping with Augmented Reality. So the new demo, basically the idea is that you can go and use a 3D virtual user's room and you can kind of swipe through clothes and that sort of thing to kind of see what it would look like on you in a way. It's a version of augmented reality.
So does this do what, like, say, like the Microsoft Kinect does, that it kind of it knows how high you are, kind of measures your skeleton, then kind of guesses how, say, everything would lay on you, for example?
Probably. I'm pretty sure the Kinect technology is kind of part of what's
driving
this. I'm sure that had a big step in it.
See, I think this is really cool for men and women. At the risk of being sexist, I think I personally know more women who would get more enjoyment out of this than men, especially the way like some women's clothing works and the sizes are, for example.
I have to disagree a little bit. I actually really hate going out and finding clothes. So, like, the whole experience of going out to the mall, trying things on, I can't stand it. So to be able to get something like this where you can just try clothes on in your house and then have them shipped to you using, I don't know, like Amazon or something, or the retailers' websites, would actually be kind of a cool concept for me, because then I don't have to leave my house and go out and spend a whole day trying to find pants that fit me.
So this is my thought, the way this is going to work. You're going to go to the mall. You're going to go to a special room, and they're going to have a mirror that has a screen embedded in it. So my thought is, this is where you're going to go. You're going to go to the mall and say, okay, I'm going to see these pants, and it'll point you, say, okay, Kohl's has this. They're $25 a pair. Go over. That's kind of the idea. Because I don't see, at least for the short time, I just don't see this technology. I just don't see this technology being home use yet. But the idea of going to a Sears, whatever the stores actually are, I couldn't tell you the last time I actually bought clothing. But I see this is the part I think would be cool. You do it, well, you know, name the clothing store of choice, walk in there, and then, okay, this fits. I think that's even a cooler idea. Mm. What I would actually do if I was them, have it read the UPC. You scan the UPC of the item, then you can try it on without actually having to unfold it or unpackage it.
Right. Well, so, I think that, like, if you just were able to, like, maybe set this up through, like, a web camera or something at your in your house or something, and you had the software on your computer, maybe you could do it, use it for online shopping.
And so the only thought about this is, it would think you'd need a big, you'd have to have a big TV. I don't see anybody doing this on their laptop because,
right.
You know, my thought is, if you want to try on clothes, you want to look at yourself from multiple angles just to see right. that you don't look like a clown.
Probably need something that scans you.
See, this is why I'm thinking a use case for a mall would be better. Maybe this is the next thing that's going to happen in your changing room of your store of choice.
I mean, at that point, if you're already at the mall, you might as well just try them on anyway. But, you know,
well,
this is cool too.
I mean, you're right. I mean, I'd really see, in, you know, see how well this works. I think Shay's right, though, personally, as much as I like the idea of the augmented mirror, is this will probably be something that Amazon uses in the future. I'm really curious to see if you're going to have to buy a kit for it, you know, like the right. Like the clothing kit. It comes with like a Kinect Vague-esque camera that only works with certain websites with, you know, blah, 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 blah. So I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how well this actually works. I mean, did they say anything on how good or bad it was or any more?
No, it was just released in a press conference in China. And, you know, it's just something that they're testing.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to subscribe to the GSMC Technology Podcast by going to gsmcpodcast.com. That's gsmcpodcast.com. Click on the Technology Podcast, and you can get us on iTunes and anywhere else on the interwebs. Also, I want you to go to facebook.com, type in GSMC Technology Podcast, look for episode 19, and comment on this podcast if you think we're wrong, do you think we're right, or do you have a story you'd like us to do. We definitely want your comment. This is episode 19. And as always, I want to thank you for listening. I'm Jonathan Charney.
I'm Shay Northrup.
Have a good day.